Representative Delahoff. Senator Frerichs. Representative McCarthy.
Here.
Senator Murphy. Representative Nickrich.
Yes.
Representative Poe.
Here.
Representative Riley. Senator Schmidt.
Here.
Senator Schoenberg.
Here.
Senator Severson.
Here.
Senator Trotter. Representative Tryon.
Here.
Full of eight.
Full of eight members stands for growth forms. President will proceed with our business. We have two major items, action items on today's agenda. First, to discussion selection by the commission, a vendor to conduct a study on the cost of healthcare provided to the state of the United States. On any further introduction, I'd like to turn it over to Ann Long to explain both the process and analysis of the competitive bidding process. Dan.
Good morning. Is this working?
Yes, it is. So I wasn't speaking directly to the mic.
Right.
Your charge is to explain both the process as well as the analysis that is conducted to score the respective respondents to the request for proposals. Please proceed.
Okay. We, at the last commission meeting, is this working? Okay. At the last commission meeting, the commission voted to issue an RFP to study retired healthcare costs. We issued the request for proposal on February 17th of 2011. We posted it on our website and also on the Illinois Procurement Bulletin, which is the official procurement bulletin for the state of Illinois. And we are very pleased, actually, with the number of responses. Responses were due by March 4th, and I think you've got a ranking sheet for you. We had seven responses from very quality firms, every one of them. Aon, Bronner, CGM Associates, Deloitte, Mercer, Milliman, and Sealer. After, once we received the responses on Friday, March 4th, we opened about reported when they were received.
Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay. Better.
You don't have to start.
No.
You heard
the other part of it already. Okay. And then we assigned internally five staff members to rank them independently. We also sent copies to the four caucuses. We all ranked them. We received responses back from the Senate Republicans, the Senate Democrats, the House Republicans. The House Democrats indicated that they would simply defer to the commission on the selection. In front of you is the how the totals came out. We experienced those 50 points max, work approach, cost, and then intangibles such as the quality of staff assigned, if they've got an Illinois office, ability to meet the time frames, and some had proprietary software which would assist them in evaluating the healthcare issue. The prices ranged in from $22,000. To $125,000. We initially thought it would be in the $30,000 to $50,000 range, and really most of them were. $125,000 was kind of an outlier. Others were a couple around the middle 60s and a couple in the 70s. You can see that from the rankings, we took all the scores and averaged them, and the top points went to Mercer, 85.125. Second was Siegel. Interesting, Mercer was the lowest price at $22,000. Siegel was the highest at $125,000. Then you had Deloitte and Aon, followed up by Bronner and CGN. So the staff recommendation would be to go with Mercer as the most qualified of the respondents. And you have to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions commission members. Senator Severson?
What exactly is the charge again that they are going to be given?
Well, you want to look at the retired healthcare issue. One is to survey of the various states and the private sector to determine what they charge for retiree healthcare, if in fact they even offer healthcare to retirees. And then the second is to develop a means of maybe charging for the healthcare for retirees based on, and we indicated this in the RFP, a means testing based on a household income. At least that's one of the factors that would be looked at. Several of the responses indicated there are other means of looking at this as well, which they could obviously include that as part of their the report. But the primary issue is, should we state look at possibly charging something for retiree health care, which, as you know, if you have 20 years in now, there's no cost. I mean, you have your deductibles and copays.
So we'll look at what other states are doing, both as far as the plan coverages and what kind of costs that they charge for sharing that they have with the retirees, what the kind of plans that they have. And they're also going to be looking at different plan options as well. That what do those states have to already do now, or just looking at the cost factor?
I believe it's more focused on the cost factor. Now, they may provide us the other data as well, but I don't know if we're going to survey the plans of every state. But certainly whether or not they offer retiree health care, if they do they charge? And then what mechanism do they establish their fees for that type of providing health care?
We're also going to look at not just based on household income. I don't know if that was actually a consensus from this group, but look at different percentages based on what the pension was, similar to what we do with our health plan here, where we have different rates based on what your salary is, not based on what your household income is.
It certainly can be looked at both ways. One of the ways that was clearly discussed by the commission and that was included in the RFP was developing some kind of means test based on household income.
I guess I would like to see us looking at different means testing. We're also looking at just based on what the state pension that they're receiving is, not the overall household income. I don't think we have anyone does something like that. From a fairness standpoint, that would be impactful.
And you might be correct. That's one of the things that they'll explore. Maybe it's not done. I don't honestly don't know. And a couple of the respondents did indicate that it is doable. But then how do you maintain it? I mean, maybe it stops.
Exactly.
So that was actually pointed out in some of the responses. So I
well, think punishes that, retirees. The whole concept doesn't make sense. I punish retirees who want to go out and get a second job or get a part-time job, or we punish them. That concept doesn't make sense. So I want to make sure that we are looking at adjustments. If you're going to do that based on what your pension is, not based on household income, or at least looking at both options.
I think that was one. Plan would be to look at both, and maybe even a third or fourth option.
A third would just be a flat one for everybody, but I'm certainly looking at pension value only, and if you're looking at house return. So we can make sure that is really looked at.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, in the reports back, I think it was a timeline as to exactly when they'd have the information available to us.
As part of the RFP, we indicated that we'd like to have the report back to us by May 2nd.
May 2nd?
May 2nd. And that's, we'll get the report timed for some type of legislative action. I do hear a lot in May, so give you time to maybe put something together in a bill form.
Sure, that seems reasonable. The sooner the better, of course. As far as, has Conifer worked with the Mercer Group in the past and hasn't heard a positive experience or?
No, we have not actually, worked with Mercer. They have done work with, I believe, CMS, DHFS, some other state agencies.
Good. So that did not go into their experience score, to the experience score?
No, the experience was more on their issue, dealing with this particular issue, dealing with the retiree healthcare issue.
Okay, and does the RFP call for them to also prepare like Cook County retirees and other government retirees as well as the state retirees?
It didn't specifically state Cook County.
But does it say other government agencies like within our state so we can see?
Yeah, actually it did not. It was more about what other states do on a state level. And also, with Senator Brady indicating maybe we could include looking at the private sector. So that wasn't really contemplated. Doesn't mean we couldn't ask them to do it. A lot of them have very large databases and some have even done work. I don't know if Mercer was one of them, but they've actually done work with Cook County, City of Chicago.
I think it would be helpful as we move forward to be able to compare some other county employees or city employees depending on what their benefits are compared to our state before we, start looking at the state to get benefits. Thank you.
This is real quick, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dan, and the numbers we keep continuing to see and the high costs is that people would like to retire to really 85 or taking early retirement and that gap between 55 and 65. Is that what we're keen on? Are we keen on someone that's been retired for 25 years?
No, I think really that once you are eligible for Medicare, the cost drops significantly to the state because Medicare is primary. So I think the focus or where most of the cost is in that 55 to 65 range.
So that's probably what we're going to be keying in on.
I think certainly that's where most of the
liability is.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
There's no further discussion. Chair wishes to recognize Representative Backer's motion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a motion that we accept Mercer and their, as the entity to do the study that's been proposed in the RFP.
Seconded by Senator Schmidt. Is there any discussion? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Dellock?
Yes.
Senator Frerich?
Yes.
Representative McCarthy?
Yes.
Senator Murphy? Representative Nekritz?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Yes.
Representative Riley? Senator Schmidt?
Aye.
Senator Schoenberg?
Aye.
Senator Severson?
Yes.
Senator Trotter? Representative Tryon?
Yes.
Nine yes.
Total of nine members voting yes. None voting no, none voting present. The motion carries. I wish to make a request since we moved this meeting up a week in order to ensure that there's that the deliverables do come in time for timely legislative action, that if we communicate to the vendor that they could make a corresponding adjustment for the schedule, that we'd appreciate.
We'll follow up.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to turn the
chair now over to Representative Miller.
Thank you very much. To extend the agenda, it is the Edward Moss.
We're going to use this handout which we have. I'm going to go over I'm going to take very quick bullet points on the setting in which we find ourselves here with State Academy, and then Jim will get into what the numbers using this as a basis for the forecast. If we look at Chart 1, we can see the national numbers, because Illinois pretty much follows the National Academy. We see that for the first half of fiscal year 11, the economies are growing modestly. Similar, we have 4 quarters of growth in fiscal 2010. In fact, we now have had enough growth, as slow as it's been, that we've surpassed where we were before the recession started. So only economists can say this. We're no longer in a recovery. We are now in the expansion phase of the business cycle. It may not feel like it, but technically that's where we're at. If we look at the next page, because two-thirds of all spending in the economy comes from the consumer sector, we have seen some improvement. We've had retail sales up for the last 7 months, and consumer attitudes, measured either by the Conference Board or University of Michigan, are starting to improve. However, if you look at this chart, we are far below where we were earlier in the 2000s. So while we're seeing some modest improvement, we've got a heck of a way to go before we get back to where you would have a normal consumer-led recovery. The same's not been true for business. Business has done relatively well. On the next chart, we've got purchasing managers index. This is a concept of looking just at the manufacturing sector of the economy. And there, both the Chicago index as well as the U.S. index, we're back to where we were well before the last recession. This, of course, is a reflection of corporate profits have done very well, and the manufacturing sector has been adding jobs in recent months, which we haven't seen in a long time. It's not quite as robust in the service sector, which, of course, is becoming more and more dominant as a portion of the U.S. economy. We have seen some improvement from the lows. However, we're still below where we had seen the recovery of 2001 and 2002. So it is doing better, but not as vigorous as the manufacturing sector. We've also had some help in the next chart with U.S. exports. The recession really hit Illinois exports. They plunged, reaching a low in early 2009. And now are headed back up. Of course, agricultural exports are helping us out a bit too. So that seems to be on the right track. The one thing that really seems to be different this time is that we're not seeing much of an improvement in the labor markets or job markets. The next chart shows unemployment rates. The latest we have for Illinois was 9%. Which just came out, that was for January. February, we have the national number 8.9. There has been some modest improvement, however, we're still at extraordinarily high level for the stage of an economic recovery. And it's a little worse than the unemployment number itself shows, and we wrote about this in our monthly briefing 2 months ago. That most of the increase has come in the household survey, which measures the unemployment rate. That's where they actually ask the individual, do you have a job, did you look for a job, etc. If you look at the establishment where they actually go to companies to look at their actual hard data on their payroll, the increase there has been very, very small. The results that come to the conclusion is the unemployment rate has improved and lowered, However, a large part of that is probably from discouraged workers, which aren't even in the labor force and are not looking. So that's a problem. That together with housing has been the major drags on keeping this economic recovery well below what has historically been the case. Another potential problem comes in prices. If you look at it on a year ago basis, they're not that bad. Overall consumer price index up 1.6%. Take out the volatile food and energy, it's at 1%. However, we've seen recently a sharp spike in gasoline and oil prices. Commodity prices are going through the roof. As those go into an economy where the Federal Reserve is still being very easy in keeping interest rates low, there's a potential that we could have somewhat higher prices, which also will act somewhat as a drag. Certainly, the gas prices currently now are putting a damper on consumer spending. They don't have that money there, they can't spend it somewhere else. Finally, we're looking at the Global Insight, which is a service most widely used, and three alternatives for the U.S. economy, which are plotted on this chart through fiscal year 2012. The baseline, which they give a 65% chance of occurring, is the most likely scenario, and then they have one that's a little more optimistic and one that's a more pessimistic. In neither one of their instances, however, do they have us going back into recession. They've got one coming down to almost zero growth for a while, and the other showing a little better than their baseline. The figures for those are on the next chart, which basically shows that for this fiscal year, the U.S. economy is growing around 3%, and quite honestly, it doesn't improve much from that 3% rate for the next couple of years. As a result, the unemployment rate comes down very gradually. We're not getting back to that 5% or so that often has covered at this stage. We're 20-some months now into an economic recovery, so and we're still lagging far behind in the job market. On the next page are several economic looks for data for the state of Illinois. Now this, you will all, if you haven't received it yet, you will shortly. Once a year we have moodyseconomy.com do a special report for the commission looking at Illinois' economy in detail, and all of them will either receive it or in the mail. This is one of the charts there so you can focus in on our state itself. Finally, with 20 months of economic recovery, what's happened to Illinois revenues? My final chart, chart 12, shows a survey of state revenue receipts. Now this looks at 16 states, and we are one of the participants, which are widely diverse geographically, population-wise, etc. And you can see the drastic fall off in receipts that occurred with the low being reached in fiscal 2009, and how it's come back up. However, we're still far below where we had been. And the last month, which came out after this was published, sort of showed the leveling off there. So we are, by these samples, showing a vast improvement in state receipts. However, we're still not back to the level which might be expected at this time of the economic recovery or now expansion. So this is the information we give Jim, and he puts together what we think the revenues are going to look like. We can answer questions after we vote on. That's all right.
Okay, thanks, Ed. I'll turn to page 16. This gives a very good visual in terms of how receipts have performed since the recession officially ended. And you can see the consistent improvement since quarter four of fiscal year 2009, when the recession technically ended. You can see that all of the economic sources, sales, personal and corporate income taxes have improved now above the thick black line, which is of course the zero, and we are now in positive territory. Page 17 shows on a month-by-month basis how receipts have performed. Overall, we're up $997 million. However, a large part of that increase is due to tax amnesty about $419 million, as well as about $354 million in inter-fund borrowing. Absent those items, and the growth would be much more modest. The following table on page 18 shows the line-by-line accounting of receipts through February. And you can see personal income tax is up 8.6%. Of course, that factors in about, we're thinking about a month and a half of the tax increase. Corporate income tax is up a good percentage-wise, but we really won't see the impact on the corporate income tax rate until estimated payments this spring, but even more so next year when final payments are due. Right now, corporate income tax in January, February, March, they're fairly small. Sales tax has been doing quite well. We're up 9.3%. However, the majority of that gain is due to tax amnesty, which is simply an acceleration of receipts we would have gotten either later this fiscal year, next fiscal year, or even subsequent fiscal years. The drag on receipts thus far is in federal sources, where receipts are actually behind about $400 million. Now, federal sources simply reflects spending on reimbursable programs such as Medicaid, and is a function of where our money is being spent. Overall, once you tally everything up, again, we're at $997 million through the first 8 months. Now, let's get right to the estimates. On page 19, and I know some of you last week here in the House Revenue Committee have seen some of these subsequent tables, but what we have here is a comparison between our 11 estimate, GOMB's 11 estimate, as well as where both agencies forecast fiscal year 12. For this fiscal year, we're estimating receipts to be, and I'm looking at the yellow highlighted line, $30.481 billion, which is $132 million below that outlined in the governor's budget proposed in February. For fiscal year 12, we're actually up $950 million over GOMB's estimate, and I'll get into the specifics as to why that is in a minute. That estimate is 34.882. When you look at the 2 years overall, that's that third section there combined, we're up about 818 million. Items of note. We believe that since the tax increase was implemented mid-month of January, by the time withholding actually took place at the employer level, that there was a lag. And we saw that lag in the January receipts. We were only up about 10%. That lag probably continued somewhat into February. We were up about 45%, although the first couple of days of March seemed to make up a little bit of that. Where we feel that money will then be made up will be in final payments next fiscal year, in the spring of fiscal year 12. When you reconcile your taxes and you see that your withholding doesn't quite come up to the level of your tax owed, and you're going to have to make up for that then in your final payments. So we're actually going to move, and I'll get into this in a little bit, we actually feel there's about $550 million of 11 taxes that will instead be receded in fiscal year 12. So that's a big reason for the divergence in us and GOMB's estimate. I'll also point out that the yellow line for both agencies assumes that there will be a decoupling from the federal depreciation provision. That's valued next year at approximately $600 million. If legislation is not passed, then both estimates will be reduced by that $600 million, and that is shown on that bottom line there called without decoupling, and basically both estimates are just reduced by that amount. For those of you who don't really understand the issue, basically, changes at the federal level in 2010 allows the depreciation to more quickly occur, in some cases up to 100%. An impact at the federal level, since we piggyback off of the federal tax liability, would be felt in Illinois unless we decouple from those provisions. Thirdly, we are assuming the refund percentage remains for corporate at 17.5%. In the budget book, GOMB had that reduced to 12.5%, presumably because of the debt restructuring the governor proposed, which would eliminate all of the backlog in income tax refunds, basically starting a clean slate, and so they felt that the refund percentage should be reduced. The value of that is about $160 million, give or take. So those are the three major points I wanted to highlight here. Page 20, there's a lot of mathematical gymnastics here, but essentially what it does is it lays out both in terms of what we think the base is, as well as the value of the tax increase, and also this timing shift that I just explained for both us and GOMB. For us, we're assuming that the base for fiscal year 11 for personal income tax, that's the top half of the page, we're assuming about 9.8 billion. Not much different than what GOMB is, they're at 9.656. The 6 month value of the tax increase, again, is also fairly close. We're at 2.933, they're at 2.884. But we've elected to account for this timing issue by removing 548 and instead moving that over to fiscal year 12, and I'll get to that in a minute. We also adjust for amnesty, and then finally hit our total for fiscal year 11 at net state revenues of 11,142. The Bureau's at 11,466, not that great of a difference there. It's in 2012 when we have a couple of things going on here. Number one, our estimate for 11 is somewhat higher. Number two, our growth factors for 12 is somewhat higher. We're assuming 3.1%, they're assuming 2.8%. And number three, we're taking into account this timing element. So when you get all that put together, our estimate for fiscal year 12 is considerably higher. We're at 15.786, whereas they're at 14.955. Down below is the estimates for corporate income tax. To a lesser extent, the estimates differ, but overall, they're fairly close. For 2012, we're at 2.77. They're at 2.609. So really, the differences are in personal income tax. Page 21, essentially shows our estimate for 11 over last year's actuals, and with the tax increase, we're anticipating growth of 3.391 billion. An interesting chart is on page 22. It compares the new revenue forecast with that enacted in July for fiscal year 2011. So in other words, the enacted fiscal year 11 budget, which includes several items shaded below that were assumed to occur in fiscal year 11, and indeed for the most part have. Short-term borrowing, pension obligation bond proceeds, tobacco revenue liquidation, and also inter-fund borrowing. All told, we anticipate revenues exceeding the enacted budget by 1.912 billion. Page 23 is simply a detailed accounting of the difference between us and the Bureau for this fiscal year, the 132 million. You see the negative for personal income tax of 355. That's simply the result of us moving money from 11 into 12. You'll see that made up in the following chart where that money increases our 12 estimate. Page 24 is just a year over year comparison between our 11 and 12 estimate. We're up 4.401 billion. Again, we're annualizing the tax increase as well as the timing issues that I've already gone over. I'll point out a couple of things. Federal sources is anticipated to drop considerably, 662 billion. This is a function of spending on reimbursable programs. It's a function of appropriations. It's simply right now taking into account what the governor has proposed. Final appropriation levels and spending plans will dictate that number in the end. Other transfers is down close to 600 million. Just takes into account that the interfund borrowing terminates at the end of this fiscal year, and as of right now, it's not expected to be repeated for next year. Then we're getting towards the end here. Bear with me. Page 25, again, gives an accounting of the difference for 2012, the 950 million. $911 off the girls' personal income tax. Again, remember, over half of that, though, is because of this timing issue. Hopefully, I've described it adequately enough. Corporate income tax, sales tax, again, we're somewhat higher in our growth expectations for the economic. So most of the other areas are pretty close. Everything from here on out is just summary tables. And I will point out page 28. This is kind of an eye-opener for those who think that the world was solved with the passage of tax increase. The bottom of page 28. This is a chart that shows what the cash balance was on June 30th. And it also takes into account the lapse period spending to arrive at a balance after lapse. And you can see that after spending $6.2 billion in lapse spending, the after-lapse balance was $6.094 billion. The best way to look at this is we needed to use $6.094 billion of this year's revenue to pay off last year's bills. And you can see how that has deteriorated over the last couple of years. And it's been several since we've been in the positive territory, but I just wanted to highlight that to show you a better measure of where we are rather than just the June 30th balance. This is a more accurate way to portray the fiscal condition. And that is all I have.
Thank you very much. We're going to take questions from the committee representing efforts and then representing time.
Excuse me, thank you, Mayor Chairman. Is there, Jim, is there any way to, if you guys look at all that, what? When you impact of the lag and what that means in general revenue between FY12 and FY13?
We haven't, we haven't assigned specific numbers to it yet, but certainly that is an issue that we all need to be aware of, that if indeed we're moving almost $500 million from 11 into 12, when you look ahead to 13, it also has to be considered that that money has to be taken out of the base. That will not be repeated in fiscal year 13. So when we calculate our growth forecast, we'll have to make sure that we back that money out for our 13 assets.
So in terms of the new 3% growth, I don't know if my math skills are leaning toward this point. I don't know if that sort of offsets that, or if it's just a flat growth of
Each percentage is probably in the neighborhood of 175, 180 million. There wouldn't be much, if any, growth, probably a little bit, in 2013. But clearly, there is an impact with that timing issue for 13.
Representative China.
Jim. I don't know if this is good or bad. You know, when you're, I've never seen conflicts since I've been here where the revenue estimate is higher than the GLMB. And I understand, so really, what you're saying though is 600 million of that will be based on some kind of legislative action between perhaps Washington, D.C., which you couple in with the state and couples as well.
That would happen to both estimates. That doesn't impact on the differential between us and Bureau. If you don't get the decoupling, both of our estimates decrease by 600 million. If we do decouple, then both estimates are what they are. So
okay, but you know, there's also, we've talked about this before, a statutory requirement for CACFA to present the revenue estimates, and I think Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, that is supposed to set the revenue side of the budget by statute, and that the General Assembly is supposed to pass a House-wide resolution.
I'll let the director answer.
Okay.
I think based on our estimates and perhaps the Bureau's, that the House is supposed to adopt, according to the statute, a House joint resolution with budget estimates. And that's, I think the statute reads as satisfied by the Constitution of the Department. Does not have to be ours, that's correct.
I thought it specifically said that your estimate you produced would become the revenue side of the budget.
I don't think so. I'd have to be wrong, right? I think that this is one of the bases is for that.
Because $1 billion is a lot of money. It's different. And, I mean, given the fact that we're $6 billion, you know, out of balance at the end of the year, we're going to be looking for a lot of cuts. We're looking at cuts and the revenue really is $1 billion or $800 million more. You see that kind of use the higher revenue.
Well, let me put things in perspective. There seems to be a flavor from you and some other individuals that I've heard that somehow our estimate is almost overly optimistic. Let me just put things in perspective for you. Our estimate for personal income growth, base estimate, is 3.1%, as well as it is for sales. GOMB's base growth is 2.8% for sales and 2.7% for personal. They have an admittedly characterized their estimate as between pessimistic and baseline. Ours is closer to baseline, but even baseline for DRI has personal income at new numbers 4.7%. We're at 3.1%. So even our estimate is still well below baseline. Over the last 15 years, personal income tax, including 4 years of recession, has grown 3.6%. Again, we're at 3.1%, and as Ed had said, we are now in the expansion mode. So to us at least, it's clear that no, we're not overly optimistic. If anything, we're still slightly under the baseline measures. And again, the big difference really isn't the economic assumptions, it's this timing issue between 11 and 12. That really drives the difference between us.
Thank you, Senator Seuss.
Questions. First, let's go back first to the consumer attitude issue and confidence issue. And then just a question of why I understand why we use why the media always uses retail sales as an item to talk about, you know, how our retail sales were this weekend. I can understand that historically, but how do retail sales really drive the economy? You're going to retail outlets, you're purchasing a foreign product that money is gone after a certain one time and it's out of the country, as opposed to if you're looking at manufacturing, if you're looking at home construction, if you're looking at automotive, at least U.S. produced automotive, then you have that dollar being trickled down 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and it has a much bigger economic impact. Retail sales don't seem to tell me that the economy is getting better just because retail itself. So, you know, how does that impact the sort of the economy?
Well, when you look at the economy and you add up all the spending sectors, which include business, individuals, government, net export, etc., the consumer accounts for 2/3 of all spending, historically somewhere between 60% and 70%. And 1/3 of that spending is, I mean, they're spending on autos too.
Yeah, I guess the media, we always talk about retail sales, that, you know, Christmas sales are up, and they seem to be focusing on, it seems like, retail consumer products, you know, necessarily
talking. Well, when you talk about retail sales, you're talking about restaurant sales, you're talking about car sales, you're talking about home sales, you're talking about the total picture. It's not just going into the Sears and buying something. And buying on the internet is a retail sale.
Well, Okay, so when they talk about that, they, when they use those numbers, they're talking about automotive.
Oh, exactly. In fact, a big portion of the increases we've seen in recent months have been in auto sales.
Okay. Because I see the news, it's always around the holiday time. They say, you know, it's good news because Christmas sales are up. Well, it's not because
of purchasing. Well, yeah, a lot of those measures for Christmas or holiday sales are excluding auto sales and excluding some of the things. So it really is more of a retail number than retail sales on a regular monthly basis.
And on the export side, is that driven more in some part because of the dollar valuation? Is there a correlation of how much the export increasing is due to the dollar value or foreign currency values?
It's measured from, the exports are from the port, and then they go back, the port from which it's exported, and then they go back from where the goods originally came from. But it's not, it's measured in U.S. dollars.
Our base on pushes are part of our new export numbers, and export numbers are improving like this. Is that improving because of the value of the dollar is making our...
No, I think what you've seen is a lot of, with both, but I think mainly products, and particularly agricultural products, which continue to do well and benefit Illinois because of drought, floods throughout the world, et cetera, that helps the farm sector quite a bit.
Do you have an idea what we think the dollar value is going to be for the rest of this year, or is that still in a certain place down at what that's actually so?
All I can say is that the trend still looks to have a very good trend, so I expect it to continue to go up throughout the rest of the year.
Last question on the, when we look at the overall growth numbers, if we see it, it looks like we're seeing a more pattern of both local governments, mainly local governments, school districts, running these huge deficits that there could be significant amount of government layoffs. So we're taking potentially a lot more higher paid jobs that could be disappearing this year with those layoffs. And while the economy is creating other jobs, many of those are going to be lower paying jobs. Obviously, we're not going to have private sector jobs that can be easy. The salaries of government jobs could be lost. Those brought into the equation when we look at our growth rate or our employment numbers and the number of jobs and salaries are changing.
Well, mainly if you look at the step 10, you can see the effect on state and local governments. We've got their spending actually goes down, or did in 2017 down again. For inflation in 2011, goes down again in 2012. So you can see that part of this is their salary. Yeah, state and local government spending in real terms has gone down in last year, this year, and next year. And part of that is the reduction in the size of state and local governments and the layoff of employees.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, reflected the first
election
as well.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Because we would like to move on to the new business number 4. I still have everybody here. Thank you very much. We appreciate our testimony. On number 4, new business investment consolidation required by Senate Bill 3538.
Thank you. I'll be brief. We must be away for RFPs. We need to pull one, and we're going to request Commission's order to issue another one. In relation to Senate Bill 3538, Public Act 961495, the Police and Fire Pension Reform Act of 2010 requires Congress to study on the feasibility of creating an investment pool for downstate police and fire pension funds. At the present time, there are approximately 640 police and fire funds that invest pension money at the local level. This study would determine the cost savings associated with creating one unified investment entity, kind of like an IRMF. and allowing for the investment functions of police and fire funds to be transferred to an existing statewide investment authority. The commission seeks to issue an RFP for investment consultant study. This issue probably will get the results back sometime late April. We have till the end of the year to complete the study, so it's, but we'd like to at least get started on it, issue the RFP, and get the results back, and so that we can, we don't really want to wait till December, we'd like to have it done late fall. With me is Dan Handler, our pension manager, so if you guys have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Smith.
The goal would be just to study the savings and the administrative costs of putting those together. Each fund, though, each community, each police department, for example, would have their own separate value. If there's one community is funding at 90%, another one's at 60%, those percentages would not change that control. So we're just talking about the investing and the administrative cost of that.
That's correct. Just like IMRF with the different municipalities. I mean, they have different, but they pay more some years to bring it up. But this would be just the same. I think pooling it into one fund may allow them to invest in instruments that they're not able to now that may generate a bigger return. They're restricted now in how many invested. And then just, I mean, 600 different funds is difficult to track it, obviously, so the bill simply wants to study this issue and look, see if there's a benefit to consolidating.
Any other questions by committee members? Are you looking for a motion?
Yes.
Representative Evans. Seconded by Senator Smith.
And I'll vote for the roll.
Yeah.
Representative Bella.
Yes.
Senator Frerichs.
Yes.
Representative McCarthy.
Yes.
Senator Murphy. Representative Nekritz.
Yes.
Representative Poe.
Yes.
Representative Riley. Senator Schmidt.
Yes.
Senator Schoenberg, Senator Severson, Senator Trotter, Representative Tryon.
Yes.
8 yes.
In the vote of 8 yes, the motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you.